Thanks for having the opportunity to come. It's also a bigger process behind that because we have now like an association, and I took the president role, but also we built this association for geoinformatics, GeoIT, and this is also like a term I like to coin a bit now, and navigation, like a very, very strong main application. And these are our industrial members. There are also, let's say, about 20 professors from university. I just saw that from the University of Heidelberg, there was a colleague here about 1 year ago. Like Alexander Siff is also a member, but usually we have it that institutional members are, more companies where the professors are usually very often also personal members. And I'd like also to offer you some opportunities to join up. It was a development about different content things, but also about different communities, about different weights of things. And we had really quite hard discussions. And so on the one hand side, I really would like to talk on the beginning, a kind of structuring, historic structuring also of words, of technologies, of trends. I was studying a time in France, but I'm not sure if it's a French system, but maybe it wasn't the university or even the professor. He said at the beginning, always give an historical overview at the beginning. And that was something which really also led to main concept, main ideas, main methods, and main applications. So of course, there are lots of opportunities to use a computer for many things, but we realize if we're looking backwards, of 100,000 programs, there's one program 80% of the people use worldwide in all domains, and that is much more important than 99 something else, whatever. So let's say one thing is also very strong, the reduction of things, where we call it maybe generalization in a general term. It's, yes, it's for mapping, but it's also in a sense to reduce things. And then of course, it's also good that we have a good labeling. So the term like GRT was one of the big results where we said it was, we need something like good terms, and we have a lack of terms, especially in the education systems. We need to sometimes have good umbrella terms, structure the different things. But of course, very often we can use or develop or find these terms when we have also a concept behind. So if you like, have, let's say, some topic with like structures on one hand side, are these quite stable, very strong IT developments, which are really running since a longer time. Then I would like to talk about, let's say, abstract media formats, which, because these are much older than technology at all, or let's say IT technology at all. And then I would like to talk also about a certain disruption what happened about 2005. So the complete old, or a lot of things in our domain suddenly disrupted. And in fact, two times, which of course to different sectors, like economic sector, like company sector, like governmental sector, like community sectors. We have now also the term like GeoIoT things. It's a bit different. GeoIT is the umbrella term. IoT, as you know, Internet of Things, is a more technology upcoming thing. And then at the very end also, the result is about our community, how we did this. And also, let's say, some of the discussions which might be, could be also reused somewhere else. I just said, I was just in Tokyo for a kind of strategic meeting in March. Every 5 years, this institute needs to do updates, and this we discussed very heavily. And even I realized this took even a certain time to understand, but also it has a deeper impact. What is about the timing? Because we are very flexible. On the one hand side, we can stick on some things longer, because I would like to talk also and discuss with you, and this is a very good idea if we are not so many people, because a lot of these things are really up to discussion, and this is a good thing. I think officially it's like 1:30.
Yeah, so aim for 1 and then discussion, but if you're comfortable with our interrupting and so on.
Really like discuss that, because a lot of these things are really like thoughts. Of course, it's a bit like also philosophy. I don't know if it's correct or not correct, or is it, let's say, and then of course, it's a kind of also opinion, and there might be different opinions. But also there are some parts which are pretty stable, and this is what I've realized was very good in the discussion in the early time when I got my professorship, at the University of Berlin, 2008. That's why also first I left OGC, because then I need to adapt there. We had to do a lot of reforms in curriculums. We always talked about GIS. But I said we have also internet, we have also mobile already. And so it gave a big dispute. In the very end, 2010, I wrote a discussion paper, but in the English term, discussion is always very general. If two people beat, what is that in English?
Debate? Argument?
Oh, that is still very fine. In German, it's called Streitpapier. And there is even like a term that professors should have debates, because it's very important to get also different opinions and different structures to derive after these debates. So from time to time, you know, in historical, there were lots of debates, and even like Heisenberg or the older professors had different opinions sometimes, and the younger one, the paradigm. These things are not have to be bad, let's say. And that's why I wrote in 2010 in a kind of discussion paper, like an opinion. So let's start on these things and maybe go back, maybe start a bit on history. We can start also a bit earlier, but I think this is maybe a good starting point because these things are still here.
Yeah, I think the old term for that might be polemic.
Polemic?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Polemic, yeah.
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 So it's a vigorous defense of a point of view.
Yeah. Mm. Let's say this kind of Streit, by the way, Professor Streit, the director of the University of Münster, has even his name was Streit. It's not just to have right, but also it's about arguing. But sometimes between professors, it could be a bit difficult because they don't like very often to negotiate. You know, what's the difference between a terrorist and a methodologist? I think we talked about it. What's the difference between a terrorist and a methodologist? I think I somehow got it from the OGC time.
Huh?
You can negotiate with a terrorist. If you
that sounds like a Chris Little joke. Yeah.
Then
so, meteorologist.
You have your idea, and he has another idea, and then sometimes you cannot negotiate. And this is also one thing. So let's start a bit like history. Like when the PC was really born, did you reflect a bit maybe the time or the history of the development of the PC? So when was it? It was 1985? And do you remember what happened at that time? Like history, maybe you know it even better.
Before that.
And Apple and Microsoft.
Yeah.
It was this huge...
user interface war. It was very clear user interface difference. It was the command line. The first PCs I used.
But this,
yeah.
The graphic came later. The first PC had no graphics at all.
No, but
the 186 and 286, those come before.
Yeah.
But the Mac had Windows from the beginning.
Yeah.
And about.
But the Mac came out in
84.
Yeah.
Yes. And what
yeah.
was 1984?
Well,
this was very exciting.
Macintosh.
Yeah. 83, I was using an Apple II.
Yeah, Apple II.
Yeah. And this was this Orwell thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The Apple was.
There was a Super Bowl
Apple, yeah.
advertisement.
Macintosh.
Where.
It was 1984 Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes,
Apple
it's the same name. Where Apple spent a huge amount of money, almost all the money they had for this spot. And there was a very exciting thing about this dualism. After this kind of spot thing, suddenly you got a dualism system. Commodore and other were also good computers, Atari also, but they're all suddenly gone. Isn't it exciting? Because of, let's say, this non-technical thing, marketing thing, suddenly the developments were much different. So I would like to ask you, when did the PC main development end?
When did PC development what?
When did that the main development end?
The main development of the PC end.
The big step when it ended. You said already graphics were suddenly inside. And what was the big step done?
The crappy version of Windows was the first, I'm guessing, was that early, late? It took a long time. It was like early 90s. Is that
yeah. What do you think?
First version of Windows.
I wasn't born yet. I'm learning
Mosaic.
A lot right now.
Coming back on internet.
I'm going to say Mosaic. The first browser.
Yeah, browser really, yeah. But the PC, people bought a PC without an internet door. PC was bought without internet.
Right.
Very hard for us, the young people, to understand today, huh? But many people bought it. Yes. I think on the one hand side, it was Windows 95. So with Windows 95, all the computers look very similar. In that sense, we know there is this kind of dot. Yeah, if you go back here, like you're starting, that's it. And of course, there were refinements. Of course, they looked better, finer, whatever. But the big steps, and this is an important thing, what was the big step and when was the timing? Another thing is, what did people do really with that? It was about this creating or editing or calculation, because a private PC is a personal computer, made calculation cheap. And the business model was it selling software. So there are a lot of, let's say, things which are derived, by the way, later on from spatial things, but I think the basic concept is pretty similar for a lot of later derived say softwares like AutoCAD and others. So what was the next age? When does it started and what does it ended? It was the internet. So when the internet age ended?
Has it ended yet?
When the main development of internet ended? Or when the second version started? Yes, mobile came later, but when was
mobile rides on internet? You can't go mobile without internet.
Right, but are you distinguishing between the sort of age of various internet protocols and when HTTP became predominant?
Or the first usable search engine, probably.
More or less, and first, the last grandma used the search engine, for instance.
More bold. Mm-hmm. It's infrastructure.
Yeah, internet. But the development is
forever.
Is also somehow, there's a main time and that's gone. And then there's the big players were developing in a very short period, and we know the names, at least here in America. There are other names in Russia, other names in China. It was very exciting. Any guess?
What's the guess?
When was the main development of, when did the main development of Web 1.0, I can say, it was already a hint, finished? Yeah, I think it's a good time. And just now put a year on it?
2004.
Yes, very good.
Which is really the slippy map.
When Google Maps came out in 2005.
Yeah.
And that, I think Google may have even developed Ajax for mapping initially.
Well, Descartes.
And it turned out to be incredibly useful.
Descartes.
They bought.
Yeah.
Right.
And the exciting thing is now, there was this O'Reilly 2.0 conference also, by the way, but it was an article in the news, like O'Reilly 2.0, are you aware about? He defined the Web 2.0.
Yeah.
And very clear, I was so surprised that this kind of, because it was a future thing, 2005, he expected the next 10 years, what's going on? And at the end, I would like to talk also with you, I have also a proposal which may go on with maps in mobile 2.0. But it was very exciting to see that. So on the one hand side, you got something like a PC 2.0. And of course, you will have also PC 3.0, or you have a Web 1.0, Web 2.0. And when did the mobile age ended? The last grandma, if she wants, she can use now a mobile phone. It's not a question about money. It's want or not want. When does it end? What do you think? I ask you, maybe.
2010. Based 2010? On your slides here, the next increment here is 2010.
2010?
Your graphic.
Maybe you need to count. Count again, please.
2015.
2010 is very good for the spatial.
I read it wrong.
No, take the 2010 because it's very good for the spatial sector. We have a time shift. That's why we come back on this, it's very important also. Yes, I would also say about 2015, you can say the development were almost done, and the situation is a bit like everybody has it, it's a commodity, it's good. But we have no tendencies for a kind of mobile 2.0 development. very exciting ones, by the way. But also we again have a split, like an IoT 1.0. And currently it's always difficult a bit to split up those things. You know, there were people talking later, I just go on the spatial sector, about WebGIS. What a stupid word is WebGIS. Really, I say in a sense.
Browser-based GIS.
Yeah, but it's absolutely not understood.
Math cafe.
No, it's not understood in that sense. That a GIS, what is a GIS and what is not a GIS? So the platform things coming like a web word. Today you would say maybe a web word would be something like Google Docs, but this came much, much later and was not the primary things. And the primary things are here, like publish, like methods, transfer, integrate. I think navigate, what do you do also with your mobile phone? Maybe sense, you can take pictures. You can also do habitats. In that sense, your mobile knows where you're living. What's your house?
Well, I think that's something that happened about 2015, is that the started to be the large scale exploitation of the user locations.
Yeah. It was a bit like the end of that time already and the starting of that one.
Right.
And
so 2005 to 2015,
yes,
the economy was built on our eyeballs. And after 2015, it's increasingly built on our location, our mobilities.
So what is the IoT operative verb? Sense, surveil?
I don't know. I give you two examples at the end. And what I really like, and that's what you said, I like the verbs, the methods. Now you see, I'm talking here, what are the main methods? And that was also very important later to distinguish. For instance, what is a GIS? Mm-hmm. And what is an infrastructure? If you call it WebGIS, it's absolutely wrong. It's not the one thing or the other thing. So on the one side, it's really important what are the methods, what you do. And also we see, I have a mobile phone because I do it for some parts. I have a PC, I do it from other parts. I have an internet role I have to pay because I use it also for other things. Another exciting thing is about what is the main business model.
So I think it's really important to also point out the time, and maybe you're getting at this, but the time that internet companies and hosting, but mostly internet companies like Google, realize the value of the users for them.
Yeah.
For not just for selling ads, but that all of that usage statistics was going to be incredibly useful for them, almost as a proprietary secret.
Agreed.
Information that would drive them, that could drive them anywhere they wanted to go. And I think Google probably realized it first.
But the first thing that I realized.
But there's a relationship there to Internet of Things. And mm-hmm. that is, I just sort of thought of this. I don't know if it's kind of half baked. But I think Google realized that that we're all things. People are all things. They're sensors. We're all sensors. And we're all producing lots of useful information. And then we just got the infrastructure got better at allowing us to do this. So mobile devices are sensors, and it's just become easier and easier for us to completely to provide all information streams about ourselves all the time now.
Mm-hmm.
And then Internet of Things typically talks about things, like
but it also
humans, but
the other part of it is. It's not just sensing now, it's actually
controlling things.
Yeah. So controlling stuff with your phone is maybe that's the IoT colon actuate
the app.
Mm-hmm. Here there's a split. And we do not exactly know. We are sure there will be a mobile phone in 10 years also. Agreed? It will be finer, better, quicker, cheaper, maybe not cheaper.
Maybe a watch, maybe a glass, maybe.
This is a new thing here. Exactly. Then, that is exactly the split now. And it's really important to distinguish like a kind of continuation thing. Like here, people talking about GIS all the time, GIS, GIS, GIS. But here, at that point, it was important to split what our infrastructure things, like to publish GIS cannot publish, it should not publish. Mm-hmm. GIS should not transport things. But it should like edit and create, of course. It should not integrate. It might infrastructure need to integrate things. And like a mobile is not good for publishing things. It's not good for transporting, we know, because it's processing, processing, transport, transport. And this is very hard in the beginning. We are 2018 and we still don't know exactly what IoT is, isn't it? So we are already in the phase, but we cannot really nail it down so clearly. But I'm sure in about 2 years, 3 years, suddenly the new words came in. We understand much more what is that and what is not that. Let's continue a bit. Like, another thing is, by the way, also very exciting, hardware rules. The winners of that game were hardware players. So, and when will IoT finish?
Where we come again?
2025,
I think I got it.
So the exciting thing is, it's not too long. No? It's not a period, if you say 10 years means 3 years, 3 years, 3 years, 3 years of development time, very early, you don't know where to go, unsure. Then a 3 years expandation time, it's tremendous. And 3 years, the very last person got it also.
Yeah, IoT is actually going to end in AR.
AR could be an extreme good component of IoT?
No, it's not a component. I think AR is going to supersede IoT. So IoT is the idea of reaching out to things with the internet, and then the internet is just going to be the what you see when you look at it.
Well,
things.
Yeah. Okay, but IoT are all the discrete things all over the place, but AR is like integrated with a human, right? It's augmenting a human's like eyeballs or ears or something, whereas IoT is not. Dispersed everywhere. So I don't think that AR will displace or somehow supersede IoT. It'll be riding on top of it.
Could be also in parallel. Yeah. But what I looked to ask you, do you know another where? You know, software. Sometimes you may call it also dataware. Wasn't it like, you know, data or service? But dataware is sometimes also a term. We all know hardware. Do you know another where which is missing?
Vaporware.
What is vaporware?
Vaporware means the software that you pretend works but doesn't.
Any other strong wear?
Wearables.
This is really exciting because if you understood the basic model, then you can really see also a very strong concept behind them and also why there are winners. So next view, and this is understood a long time. I was much more technology-driven guy. I was very excited in technology and tried to figure out technology-wise. But then there were other people saying kind of this kind of Maslow, what does people need? And it was realized that a lot of things, like human basic rights, don't change so much. There are more tools. The tools change. So the technology are different, the new technology, all technologies. But at the very end, the abstract media formats, and if you have a better term, I'm also searching for some terms, I will ask you later also, because there are some, I just called it like abstract media formats. Like, what is an abstract media format? You know, there were in the Bible people writing a letter from A to B. So the letter as a concept is very old, like one-to-one communication. In China, maybe 2,000 years ago, they wrote maybe a stone letter or like a pamphlet, but it was a letter. So the letter concept is much older than the PC. So when we see that, and this is exciting, what I think, also, who's the winner? At that time, when I started with some work on this, a lot of people said Unix engine, this is a computer. Microsoft, that's not a computer. This is just a play or whatever. And who won that game? The Unix guys, all dead. So what was exciting on the one side, it's a conversion of a letter, like a classical thing. And today you'd say you have something like MS Word on Excel, and that stands for billing or calculations. And this company who had that model made it in about 10 years to get from a little company to a worldwide huge company. Because everybody in the world in all domains used that method for text. It was not the Unix guys. They did not really understand what is important. Important was this function or method or later application. Today you would say MS Office. You can say MS Office, which used by 80% of all computers worldwide. And
I think that the success shows that whatever can ability and their needs
yes.
will win.
And the need is to write a letter. Yeah. Simple.
I think your next where is mindware.
Yeah, I will ask you.
I like that.
Yeah. I like the next.
Little chips in your head.
Right. What was after the internet? Which kind of abstract media format was converted in that age to 2005? So, also has a good, let's say, letter understood, huh? Okay. You write letter today?
Yes.
Still, huh?
I do.
Pretty stable. Another format now, an abstract media format, which was converted in the internet age.
That was 2005 is about the rise of blogs.
Before 2000, let's say 1995 to 2005, so Web 1.0. We use it every day. And like also people lived before the internet and they had also a life. They had their problems, they need to order things. So how did the people order that things before? Today, you go to the internet. Before, there was a catalog. Remember the time of catalogs? If you want to build a lamp or you need some lamps, you got a catalog from this kind of 1, 2, 3 lamp providers and you look at a catalog. Like an IKEA catalog. And today, the catalog is your homepage. Or there's a super catalog, what I call is Google. You can find everything, but you cannot buy everything. And you can have Amazon and eBay, which you cannot find everything, but what you can find, you can buy. And these kind of, let's say, very technical terms, you could say, and a bit like commercial, where search and buy. So. And global transport. And the business model was not selling software, so important. What you mentioned before, earlier, I read this kind of Google story. There's a kind of Google book at the beginning, very exciting to read. And they said the biggest problem what they had at the beginning, they wanted to sell the clicks by cent or 1,000 clicks by $1 or something like that. Did not work out. Then they wanted to go to intranet. Like big companies should buy the search engines for intranets. Not successful. And then was extremely important was a split. This was vice versa before what you said. It was important to understand there's a split between a customer and a user. Are you a user of internet or are you a customer of internet? Are you a user of Google? Is it like a synonym already? Are you a user of internet of Google? Sorry, or a customer of Google? Who is the customer of Google?
The companies selling they're paying them to put ads on.
No, you're a product.
It's the user's behavior that becomes the product.
Yeah.
So the user is served in order to observe them.
But who?
A company
Google can send the bills to.
Yeah.
It's exactly the advertisement. It was so exciting. So they struggled a long time with the technology, but they did not know how to sell it. And if you see the catalog model, by the way, it's also pretty old model. Also, it's not really so new. There were also advertisements a long time already inside. And they were also used, so it was so important to split from a technology point of view, one thing, but also having different roles and understanding the roles made Google what it is today. Otherwise, it would never survive. Good technology, good idea, never survive. Happens very often. So what's next media format? What was converted in the next 10 years? On the last 18 years? No, last.
So you talked
yes.
about, you mean from the rise of blogs and interactive, writable web?
Well, the news, the media.
News, media, so newspaper was converted. People today in the underground.
Publication,
What else?
Yeah, but all of those things have been converted into one post or another.
Yeah, but another thing, like a classical thing, our maps. It's Google Maps.
Movies.
And books, like e-books. So what happened was that in this period it was so extreme important because something what we are very related to was suddenly getting mainstream. And suddenly in a complete different way, it was very disrupted. So that was something which is also very exciting. Another thing is was very exciting, not the software people win, not the data people win. Google, by the way, was one of the big losers in this age. Samsung and Apple, these are the hardware manufacturers, and they are very, very rich now. They made it. It was the hardware who's the winner. Isn't it exciting? a long time we said, oh, hardware is gone, it's gone. And that's why China is so rich today, because all the products here are being done in China. So, next one, what's left?
What about Facebook?
Facebook is very exciting. You can take Facebook very well into a Web 2.0 development. So, it's a good point. That's what we like. Yeah, it's very good. I like Wikipedia. It's a very good Web 2.0 developments. And this is exciting because it's not a mobile thing. Facebook was also not very good in mobile at the beginning. It was very strong on the social media, of course, as we know today. And it's also what I learned from Claire Hadley from this former Ordnance Survey. She studied law. Mm-hmm. So she said there is this kind of pestle. Did we talk also about testel and pestle? Political, social, technology, economical, legal, uh-huh. These dimensions. And then I said, I renamed it. So I know it's not pestle, but politics starts first, technology starts first. I said technology, testel. Like technology, economical, social, Facebook, political, legal. Now starting like even Mr. Trump is using Twitter and other things, like an internet connection. So the first are the technology guys in this development. Then the economic people are coming. They make it cheap, they make it organized. Then if it's cheap, the social people coming. The social people don't want to have it expensive. They want to, but they socialize it. It's also about it. But now, my candidates is something, I don't know exactly, but what I think there are still like flyers available. You have a lot of flyers. You have something also like home automation, like business cards. So now it sounds that this flyer is so easy. So you find it everywhere. I just was outside on the street. Of course, there were flyers. I took also pictures, but I did not put it now into the presentation. So my thing is, because it's a very compact format, you find them in all worlds, in all domains. It answers the what we call in German the W questions, like where, when, what, how, it's in English, the H. And I think it's not like fancy technology like RR. Like when we remember at that time, what can you do with a computer? Oh, lots of ideas. Huh? Like gaming was great. What won the game was the typing engine. That's it. So for a technology guy, it's very disillusionizing this kind of view. So if you can make it like a flyer, then it's something. Now, we need to speed up. What's about geospatial things now? We're coming in onto this development now. We have a development also, which was also reflected. We have the where, what we are focusing about. Then we have a certain trend, which was in the history much more computer science. And now we talk very often about information technology. IT is a very clear word. Why we don't use it so much in our spatial domain? Like there was the term geoinformatics, which is a bit like academics, but also what's about geo-IT? You know, health IT, there's financial IT, there is car IT, and something IT. And so we had a little discussion about this, especially with Google and also with HERE, because they don't like the term GIS, because they say we are not a GIS provider, we are not a GIS, which is understandable, of course. So what is the denominator? What is a good term to bring us together? And so we somehow went at the very end for GeoIT. And that's what I really like to promote. So if I'm going away and you have the discussion, what is a good umbrella term? Geoinformatics, more academic. GeoIT, also like IT, also mass market in every pocket. And another thing is, as I said, GIS is not the umbrella term, and also WebGIS is not the umbrella term. It does not connect. This is not a mobile GIS. Not, because the functions of that thing are different, or the methods, I'm using that, than that. By the way, I'm still using the PC, but I'm not editing here at the corner of the traffic light something. It doesn't work very well.
I think what term to pick has less to do with your explanation of the terms meaning or significance. It has a lot to do with how long the term has been around. Because whenever a term comes around, when it's new, people like it because they can associate their imaginations to it. When too many people associate too many imaginations to a term, the term becomes dirty and people dislike it and they have to invent a new term. If you strip off all that baggage and you look at just the literal meaning of the terms, it probably make very little difference. You can spin it one way or another anyway.
Agreed. But what happened?
But once it's been around for a while, you need a new term to replace it to have a fresh start.
It depends on communities. And if Google would not and OpenStreetMap would not be found in 2005, maybe we had a very continuous, about 5 years shift development. But what we happened, on the one side, there was a big disruption. And suddenly a lot of new people coming in. Also the mass market is there. So if you talk with people do you know Aldi? It's a bit funny. It's a German company, sells products like a magazine. So if you would go in a regular shop and you would ask for a mobile PC, thinking about that, people would just send you to that kind of things. Because they say, technically, it is a mobile PC. Yes, it has a mobile architecture, really. But people in the main street don't consider this as a PC. They say it's smartphone, something else. And they know it very well. Like the term for apps or applications is very clear, separate on these things. So what happened was a bit like we had this development that suddenly is a mainstream, like in the Google Android development in API level 1, already geospatial was built in. The Geo API was from the very, very beginning inside. And so what we had then was, let's say, this kind of first view where we had, let's say, a time shift about 5 years. So I can ask you, so one was the development of GIS, and when was the main development of GIS ended? So we can derive that. And it was not at the beginning, because at the beginning they had no graphics at all. A computer could print, a printer could have graphics, but not the computer itself. So about 1990 was maybe a good time. And so when I was saying, when is the main development of GIS ended? And this is now important. It doesn't mean that it's not existent anymore. We have many things around which
just
still used.
Evolve in important ways.
But after
that time.
Yes.
So you're saying about 1990?
I think about 2000, exactly when you started with OGC, mm-hmm. with the web, the SCI. About 2000, the WS
was really not particularly usable on a PC till about 1995.
Yeah. Three years expandation.
So that was the sort of beginning to be the heyday of RQ. Right? All of a sudden, it was actually something that didn't require constantly.
RQ was 91 around.
But we didn't really use it,
It was ArcInfo.
It was ArcInfo in the early 90s.
It was ArcInfo in the 80s.
Yeah, but it was still early 90s, it was still using workstations.
Yeah. But nonetheless, there is the menu, the AML comes where you can design graphic user interface in around 88, 89.
Yeah.
That's exactly. The time. Before that is all command line.
First time that I could set people up to use the GIS was really was ArcView.
Mm-hmm. That's 91, 92 maybe, ArcView.
What happened was, and that's why I'm looking for some terms now, and when we develop also with OGC the idea of a spatial data infrastructure, I like the term very much, spatial data infrastructure. But with the next slide, I'm coming with this kind of disruption. We suddenly have a situation that where some people using this term, but other people have developed from a content point of view a very similar thing, but use another term. And we have a missing umbrella term. Mm-hmm. What I would like to talk about was...
There's kind of a distinction, though. You know, NSDI predated 2000, but up until 2010, it was almost exclusively, files by FTP, or here's a number, call. And so this idea of the granular SDI was much more recent. Right?
Also, the I was missing, the infrastructure. where a lot of things like OpenStreetMap from the very beginning had a clear infrastructure view. And so also Google provides with Google Maps a huge infrastructure. So what I really would like to talk, and maybe take also how long it takes, and maybe have some new ideas also. I need a term for, to be as concrete, to a cover term or like an umbrella term for OpenStreetMap, for Google or here is another company, APIs, and also to cover the SDI of the geospatial, more governmental driven one. What is a good term? I like the E, the I with the infrastructure. Sometimes I'm using like GeoWeb infrastructure, but somehow I think GeoWeb, yes or no. I'm still looking for a good term, an umbrella term for the internet covering these three major infrastructures.
Collaborative GIS?
No, absolutely, that's wrong. GIS is absolutely wrong. You know why?
Collaborative GIS.
No, because it's written here. It's nothing about creating and editing or calculation.
Yeah.
It's absolutely a different topic.
This
is like if you compare it to material, if you have like the steel production, you create a kind of steel, let's say, part. And that part is shipping. So this is the railway who ships this kind of to another place. It's complete different things.
Yeah.
And this is why I'm so annoyed about this kind of web GIS. It doesn't understand the difference between production or editing in that sense and the shipping. Different topics. And that's both rail, has both steel, yes. But there are different things if you produce, if you form and reform mechanics, and if you ship it.
Well, I counter argue that I think there's a wish, even though it hasn't really been materialized yet, there's a wish that the browser could replace the installation software and make all the creation, editing, and analytical functions available through the web.
OpenStreetMap is a huge step in that direction.
No, two things. I agree, like what we call today like Google Drive, no? You can create a document today.
Something, yeah. So the Google Doc is,
yes,
you know, halfway there replacing Microsoft Word.
That's a
right?
Web word. To take the term,
mm-hmm.
A web word. Where a web GIS could do it also, but what is very important, that it's not the main function. It's a function which came much later, also in history, also in time, but also in need. Because a lot of people still prefer the same, more or less, environment. If you're editing, you need to have an office, you need to have a good space, concentration. If you're on the street at a traffic lamp, you don't like to edit. It's not a good time. But I agree.
You're combining web map with web GIS, which conceptually should be different.
Yes.
But in reality, most of the things that claim to be a web GIS are still largely just a web map.
Yes, agreed. And this is the main purpose. And this is, if people understood this from the beginning, a web map has a mass production, mass function. People don't like to edit things on the map. They just want to use it and want to find this place.
So in order to just use it, and to, for example, just add information about the things that are around them, then they need spatial framework.
A bit later, but the first time, like when the growth was from Google Maps, like 2005, what you said, by the way, it was a major architectural mistake in OGC at that time also to not understand the tile system. Because the delivery of millions of people together with a system which is more or less, let's say, database from the GIS thinking, is of course an absolute deadlock. So the Google and also OpenStreetMap from the beginning started to use this tile system because
OGC was behind and also ahead. So
yes,
they didn't know that Google would be successful, so successful with one map.
But that's what people need. Again, coming back to the needs of people.
But what we found out was that if you want millions of people to use maps, then you only give them a street map and nothing else.
And then they are happy. And this is something what I sometimes really like. That is the match what people need and what we give them.
But that's changed now. See, so now there are vector tiles.
Great.
Because it turns out to be necessary to add things to the map.
Web 2.0, Web 3.0.
Three, yeah.
But understand first one. If you don't make one, you never have a two. for this, let's say, people or company. But I think with the SDI 1.0, we wrote with Carl Reed and Doug Niebert. We wrote this paper about the SDI 1.0. Mm-hmm. We first have to done one step which is sufficient and can survive. And then we do the next step. Because otherwise we have never, we are too.
I just had a thought. I don't know if this ties back properly to your question of 5 minutes ago, but looking for that umbrella. So that umbrella thing that you're trying to cover with, you know, that covers SDIs, OpenStreetMap phenomenon, Google Maps.
Yes, of course, it's a huge infrastructure.
So robust, flexible API, geo APIs. Are an important part of that.
And it needs to be internet connected. Mm-hmm. Because APIs, you have a mobile, your APIs, you have a PC. It needs to reflect the transport, the published transport integrate issue, for instance.
APIs don't care whether you're a mobile or a
exactly,
browser.
That's why it's not a good term.
Or a robot.
Because
or
it does not care. It's like an over.
But the essential thing, there are many APIs, but the essential underlying framework was a massive amount of geospatial data that was aligned not very well with a massive amount of satellite imagery. And that was the basis of Google Maps.
You mean the base map?
Dial tone? The dial tone was the base
for base maps.
Map, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I need a term for both things. I think the big umbrella term is GIT. Can they take like a big one? Like IT,
mm-hmm.
It's understood. Meet people if you go somewhere in some countries, IT, okay, understood. Also, there are many details, of course, but IT is quite framed. So now, what I say, the umbrella of all these things, you have the green things, this is IT, and this is GeoIT. And now we have to get more detailed, saying, no, I'm not talking about PC, I'm not talking about mobile, I'm talking about really transport, in this case, even global transport, internet-based. So I need a term. It should be something like geo or map or so the geospatial part. Mm-hmm. It could be something like what people also understand, like web, I understand, like an infrastructure. Mm-hmm. It should not be too broad, because otherwise if you're too broad again, then we are not good in defining something which is on this level and in fact combines these things. This is now from the timing. It comes 2005, 2000 we started earlier. But of course, here was a big clash later on. I need a term for this infrastructure.
We always had trouble with the term GeoWeb. And I speculate the reason was that by saying GeoWeb, we thought of the web extended with location. And people looked at that and said, well, that's some special corner of the web for location, rather than being more restrictive rather than being broader.
I also don't like GeoWeb because there are two totally different things. One is that a web that's delivering geo content, and the other is geographically laid out web.
Yeah, it's connected.
I think there's a consistent difficulty in that
you
try to focus on something, you end up with a term that's too narrow. And when you try to come up with a broader term, then you lose the focus of what you're trying to push.
The focus is definitely, the geo shouldn't be describing the web, because if that's the case, you're focusing on, where is the hub of, the net, or where is the conduit of the transmission line.
Hmm.
So that's not what you're talking about.
I also don't like the term. That's why I'm really not happy.
Yeah.
But if I say SDI, vice versa, then a lot of people consider it the OGC SDI in the governmental domain,
mm-hmm.
and the OpenStreetMap people don't say we are not SDI. Mm-hmm. And Google says we are not SDI.
Mm-hmm.
What you said earlier, because the term was claimed in a positive sense very early by time, and in fact realized was done by these players. So I'm a bit still searching for a good term.
Yeah.
I don't like the web GeoWeb term either.
What technically would apply is Web of Things, because that's all the information of the web applied to the real world.
Digital Earth. that's another term out there that tries to cover parts of that.
Well, maybe not, because the globus, like the Google Earth globus, is very synonym for that. Globe infrastructure or the globe infrastructure with collision to global infrastructure, of course, a bit. So if you have a good term, so we can say we have the umbrella term, it's GRT, what I propose. Then we have, let's say, this is GIS, fits very well. By the way, I have nothing against GIS, but just on the right chapter. This year, I'm still struggling. Here, we have the term also location-based apps, and here, we don't know, but we have some ideas. So what happened also, and this is also very exciting, we got a full integration, an industrialization process now.
Well, there's an old term called location-based service.
This is the wrong term, because this is an old term, not because it's old, but the function is between service side and application side,
mm-hmm.
or client server.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And today, the major architectural change is that happens on the mobile phone, on the client, you would say, side, and that's why it's not a service, that's why it's an application.
No, I'm saying that the term that you're looking for the previous day.
No, that's not very good, because on the one side, it was very strong connected really on mobile, already from the very beginning. But the very early mobile phones, they had no capabilities on that side. So the kind of triangulation was done on the infrastructure, was never successful. Where coming now, the GPS built inside here, as we know, on the apps, on the architecture also running here on this computer, then it really expanded that what we know today as apps.
Maybe it's cyberproof.
No, I think it could be much more simpler, and also I need to describe also a bit. I think infrastructure is a good thing, like a term infrastructure is always not bad.
Yeah,
and
you get to the fra part and people's eyelids droop.
Yeah. It should be also maybe some of our historical questions, because we exactly know which players we have. We can even describe them. We know even the people, but we don't have a good term for them.
I think this may be a way to co-opt the term, because everybody thinks they know about cyberspace, and they think of it as somewhere divorced from the physical world. So information that connects you to the physical world could be cyber Earth.
Yeah, but if you talk to people, are you OpenStreetMap? Are you Cyber Earth?
Yeah, OSM is a data representation of features in the Earth that is supplied by people who are there.
Try to find a term these people like, and these people like. That was the thing. What was? I'm still not successful. But what I want to say again, another thing happened now, 2005. And it's even more important. We got a full integration and an industrialization of what we're doing here. In history, have you heard about these Kondratiev cycles? It's a very exciting theory about economics of the complete industrialization from the beginning, about end of the 7th, about saying from today, about 250 years ago, roundabout. So what we have, when that happens, like the first was clothing in England, you know, there was a steam engine. The people who created the clothing by hand, they don't like the industrialization. This pattern comes again, 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 again. So these people who originally are in charge of these people, they don't like the new terms. They don't like the mass product. They say it's not good enough. We have to make it handcraft, whatever. But they don't talk so much about the price also. So the beginning was that clothing was very expensive at that time. Today, it's a mass product. Everybody can have your clothes. And what that happens to our field also, we have a lot of people from the old expert world who never really liked it, that it's being really so expanded. It's like a mass product now. And they say it's just a mass product. And thus, on the other hand, it's a very stable economy. It's a very stable company, very stable, huge grown market of jobs. If we see from a university point of view that also you'd like to have a job sooner or later, don't you? Yes. So sometimes the professors are still talking about other things, but you need to have sooner or later a job. And if you can go into an industry, it's a good alternative, which was not before. And this is, I think, a major change. And I think the potential younger people accept it much better than the older people. Just a guess. of course, exceptions apply, but this kind of from expert small world to mass market is a clash also of cultures. But you have seen Microsoft, no? How strong the development is later. If you have, let's say, a clear market, they can invest into future, into research and development much better, and they really start to go ahead, where we academics sometimes behind already. Another thing, the next clash was LBA. When I started 2008 in Berlin, I also organized a conference called DroidCon. It's today the world's largest conference for Android programming. So we had just 2 weeks, 2 years ago, started in Beijing, but we have a network of 15, like San Francisco, New York. So Android programming was suddenly completely different. And by the way, you need to have other architecture patterns than internet. From a technology point of view, it's much different. So the next clash came. So in a short period, things happened. This is also something maybe we can talk about later, but I want to go one thing before, is about that. Also, the communities changed now. And we have huge disputes. What are our potential, let's say, companies or institutions? Our older colleagues, they're always talking about governmental mapping agency. You know? It was a long time, this direction. Somehow governmental. Good paid, no stress jobs. I want to make it a bit like... So in the early time, almost this governmental institution did. But when I ask the students today, What is your guess about the usage and also the potential jobs and also the hierarchy? They say very strong that companies are really much more dominating than also OpenStreetMap is extreme dominating. If you think it's a kind of, OpenStreetMap is a kind of social association. That's it. They have no money, they run it with low money, they have created an infrastructure worldwide, is running. Isn't it really impressive what they have done? Just because it's a community idea, and it's absolutely impressive what they have done. And this part shrinks, from my point of view, more and more. So if I talk with the younger generation, also about job opportunities, it's not as it was before. But I have to say also, and our professors, and I'm still the youngest professor at my university, in this domain, the old people always talking about mapping and governmental services and whatever, and a complete change.
I have an observation, and I was very interested in your comment about how Google switched to their business model from trying to sell things to people or sell clicks or sell intraweb services for searching things to just sort of making a giant index of the world and becoming a one-stop shop for all kinds of search. And what my observation was here about the government's role shrinking and these others exploding is that in 2011 in Seattle, we had at AAG a series of panels on gas tiers and web services for locations and places and things like that. And Mark Wick was there. He invented geonames. Mm-hmm. And the thing about geonames, which fits into one of these circles, probably companies and users,
I think here,
is that
very strong, yeah.
Is that what happened was that the lack of governments to be able to act on the need was one part. But the other thing is that they're always limited by nature. So a government is only the authority for their area of their country. Mm. But this is a global phenomenon. As you mentioned, the Google Maps is a global map.
The reason why alternative.
Google moved mm-hmm. into the space
I is understand.
Because they cross all those boundaries. They dissolve the boundaries. Why does OpenStreetMap exist? The original purpose of OpenStreetMap was because in the UK, mm-hmm. you had to pay a fee to the Crown to legitimately use any geographic information for yourself. And they said, we can map everything if we just move around and add all the information ourselves right. on a map. And that's where it arose. It was the clash with the sense that the government owned and controlled the information, but wasn't providing it to you in a form that you needed or could use, mm-hmm. with the new opportunity that PCs, computing power, and all this other mm-hmm. other technology enabled people to start building their own infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So that's the dividing line right there, is the ability of the people together with companies who saw an opportunity mm-hmm. to start rebuilding this infrastructure erase all boundaries and make everything flattened out for the whole world, be able to find anything anywhere.
It's a little bit unfair though, because so much of what you describe as existing now was started by governmental programs. Mm-hmm. So Google's ability to produce street maps came from Tiger data. The OpenStreetMap ability to map, you know, at a community level, came from GPS and also came from the government agencies showing an example of how to build that data. You know, there's examples time and again of that, what companies and communities are now able to run with was started at a very high risk by governmental programs.
Can I really answer also that one, because it was quite important. There's another thing is what is really crucial. About 2005, Josh, maybe I'm not sure if you remember that we had a discussion in New York City, in the UN, and there was a question about GRM.
Yeah.
And I said, what is the operation model of an infrastructure, of a geospatial infrastructure? And if you see like electricity, if we see also other infrastructures like water, or we see others, the infrastructure operation models are pretty the same. The physical product or the product is a bit different, but you have a lot of, and then you got two things. On the one side, you have this kind of monopoly, which works worldwide. It's not so often. And you have, let's say, little player, and the little player need to cooperate. And the example, what I proposed at that time, and this is a success example, by the way, coming from Europe, was this kind of GSM mobile operating system. GSM at the early time, and the mobile phones came in, there was the American natural growth, remember maybe that time, and then there was the European approach. And why the European approach was so successful in opposite to the American one? If governments do it correctly, whatever that means, and there was a time of liberalization in Europe about, at that time, about liberalized gas, for instance, liberalized water, liberalized electricity. So you can disconnect, you can buy electricity here from a company which is usually originally served just San Francisco. You know this kind of liberalized infrastructures? Is it now here in the US also?
To some extent, yeah.
And there was, now coming to your point, there were really some, on the highest governmental levels, there were thoughts to liberalize mapping also. Or could be more concrete, the governmental mapping agencies. So there was, beside railway, beside water, beside air transport. By the way, air transport is one of the best examples how to cooperate. Like Star Alliance, a very good example. Like banks, the bank infrastructure, the bank money, electronic money is also a very good example of how many little actors can cooperate in a very, by the way, very, very stable way. And there was, about that time, there was a negotiation on very high level to privatize.
Yeah.
Privatize in a good manner. And there was the opportunity, because Google, what you said, was not there. OpenStreetMap, it was not so cheap to just take GPS things to do. So there was extreme a window of opportunity. If at that time things had been liberalized in our sector also, then the world looked different. And I remember, at that time, I talked with Graham Boves. He was working for Ordnance Survey. He said, when is Ordnance Survey setting up a first office in Germany? And where you could do it, he said, come to Münster. He said, Ordnance Survey is a British, and we are governmental. So what we do in Germany, you know? And I said, sooner or later, you need to distinguish, are you a data provider, geodata provider, or are you a good British governmental something? And sooner or later, you need to make clear what kind of role you want to have. And take the example, do you know T-Mobile? Do you know who owns that? Yeah, the German Bundespost at that time. At that time, there was a monopoly in Germany, exactly the development. At that time, it was unbelievable that a kind of user here in Harvard University may use T-Mobile because it's a German Deutsche Bundespost institution. And because of this conversation process, and this we talked very dense in 2005, we had also a visit of the Deutsche Bank Research, because he made a study why GSM was so successfully in a cooperative style with little smaller institution, not one worldwide. And so at that time, really, the example was kind of given, even a few years ago, it was unbelievable that the Deutsche Bundespost now has a new name, T-Com, has a daughter in the US, and here you got a hotspot, something. So it was unbelievable that, and that thing happened not in our sector. There were some resistance parts. There were, let's say, like a semi-privatization, like you said, also in UK, like Ordnance Survey tried a bit, but what he made an extreme mistake was, you know, about the MP3 things. They were going to court, and I heard once the number, £20 million they made just out of money because people used their data not correctly.
Napster, you mean?
So they had the geospatial data already. Oh. So the geospatial data from Ordnance Survey, they could go to court, the rights of infringement, is it the term? £20 million. Think about this, per year. So they made huge amount of money. That's why it created in Britain such a kind of atmosphere. That
you had to have OpenStreetMap.
You need to do something against it, exactly.
But the model that they were pointing at in Europe at that time was that USGS was giving away all of their data. The Tiger data was free.
Yeah.
And the government didn't get very much back out of that.
Yeah.
The Tiger data was taken by 3GDT and two other navigation providers who fixed it up for their purposes and didn't return it to the Census Bureau.
It's like open data is also a way of surrendering. And that's, but the exciting point where they were very powerful, like I said, like DHL, do you know DHL?
Mm-hmm.
It's from Deutsche Bundespost. By the way, they were together.
Mm-hmm.
So they expanded the market tremendously. I want to come back on this.
Yeah, I want to go there too. I think that, you know, I agree that your observation, the government role is shrinking.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think it's still a very strong player in the field, may not be solely in the creation or provider role, but as a consumer too.
Mm-hmm.
When both the companies and the open community products are just about growing phase, government's consumption gives them the resource to continue on. And I think that's not to be ignored.
No, the only way that Google Earth ever happened was because the US had already bought all that imagery.
Yeah.
And so Google was buying it essentially 6 months later for a song.
Yeah.
Because it was already paid for.
And
but you cannot export that very well. If you build cars, like in Korea, this is something you can really good export. So what I want to say, government consumption is always a bit, sometimes they don't pay so much money, or in a way that they somehow pay suddenly a lot of money, and then next 3 years nothing. And so government is always a very difficult customer, depending which party has got ruling. And
but it can be a very generous customer.
Yes, of course, absolutely.
Yeah.
It depends on time.
Well, but they were critical when it was unclear that there was a business model for mass satellite imagery collection. You know, NGA and the Imagery for the Nation, at least in the U.S., essentially built, I mean, they literally wrote checks to build the first satellites to do that, as did France for Spot and so on. So there's that phase of, whereas the industrialists are not going to write their checks until somebody shows that this is a viable business.
But also to transform businesses,
because
there were the mapping agencies already. And if they would transform it like other infrastructures, like gas is also important. Huh? Gas is important, very important. At that time, it was not just getting some shacks, but also in a way transforming the sector, like what's happening a bit like maybe in the space industry now. It's also very exciting with the NASA at that time, and now also like private companies get in. That is also very exciting if government just not pay or get something, but also transform complete societies, because sometimes the expert itself are not able to think so clearly. They don't want to be suddenly commercial guys.
Now, Graham always complained about that, as they said, Ordnance Survey would love to give their data away, but they're legally not allowed to do it.
But he did not say who will pay his bill at the end of the month. Huh? This is what economy brings.
Well, at the same time that you know, USGS and Census were giving away their data based on analyses showing what huge returns they were on those data assets. You know, Ordnance Survey was saying, we'd love to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do that in Germany,
yeah,
because they won't let us do it here.
Yeah,
so,
but they, as I said,
yeah,
still depended on the salary of the income. And if you have really like companies, you have a good balance between many, many factors. And it's very stable, like companies can run maybe 100 years and some times. Another thing is now, because we're coming maybe also a bit to the end, I was start to think about IoT things and about geo-IoT things. So we said it's something going on currently. What we talked now before is a bit historic. Yeah? Something's what would happen if the government has done something. But today we can say we got two infrastructures, of a street map, and that's Google. That's it.
I react very strongly to this term, GeoIoT, because I don't think there is any IoT that is not geo.
Yeah, but it might be something which is a missing part. And an example of what we worked together out with Philips, what a bit exciting about lamps. I think I have it maybe also here. Think about this idea. Maybe you know the product Philips Hue. Is it popular in America? Yeah, it's popular. Like, in fact, you can have all the lamps here on your smartphone. And you have a long list because 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, so whoever once used it said at the beginning, if you have two lamps, it's good. If you have, like we have in the laboratory, maybe already 30 lamps, it's really like a big hassle to find the lamp. So what is a classical way to approach these things also? What you said with place names, wasn't it before? So can you give a place name to this lamp? Or give it first maybe a name. And maybe very often these are also place names. Because you try to derive the geospatial. Like this lamp here. How you would name it?
That's Sarah.
Sarah, okay. These are one of these artificial things. Like you have also like villages names or like a lot of spatial names. They have just a name from somebody who was there. On one side, it's good for those who know this name. If you have like a map with a lot of villages and you know this area, you can go to Sarah Village, fine. If you're a visitor, or let's say a tourist, or here somebody like me just coming in, I never want to learn this name, Sarah, for this lamp, because tomorrow I will not need this anymore. So not a good idea, but set for, let's say also Alexa, works very well. Alexa, put lamp Sarah on.
Or put the lamp over Sarah on.
That is new, and I heard about they're working on this. I heard also that Alexa was set up in Danzig in Poland.
Mm-hmm.
The Amazon laboratory you create Alexa was in Poland, and there were some peer people from Berlin also working. And they said, first things first, they reduced it for the first time. By the way, also Philips, the people we had on the IoT conference, the leader of Philips IoT with the product Philips Hue. Yes, they at the beginning they thought about this idea already, but they had a risk of over-engineering.
Mm-hmm.
They said it's too complex, and the first step, maybe 2-3 lamps is good. But now think about this idea, and we did a master thesis for this. You've seen maybe there's a kind of remote control. Remember the time I would just be able, like a remote control for televisions, just to point to this device and then switch on and off? Would that be cool? Or useful. So this is a good example, I think, if you bring in geospatial insight and you have maybe two lamps at the beginning, a ceiling lamp, and you have just a desk lamp. So we did an experiment about indoor positioning, and because you know indoor positioning doesn't work so well, but if you have only one lamp in one room, how much indoor positioning do you need? In and out.
If you can jump over this phase, I suspect that this phase of need will short-lived in a way that very soon AI would allow you to say, let my way from where I am to my bed or
right
to the shower.
Next 3 years?
It's all geo.
It's all geo.
But is it
it's
next
all geo,
3 years?
But I don't need to know any lamp anymore.
Yeah, but next 3 years.
Probably.
You know, we're talking about a complete finalized 6 years development we have now, 2015,
okay.
18. Next 3 years means 2021.
Yeah.
And
So why bother with this? I mean, it's going to be...
Because, like, Sanhe E coffee, the coffee that comes with the pre-mixed amount of milk and sugar, like, maybe you want to turn on one and turn off the other. Maybe you don't want them to just automatically trace your position and just turn on and off automatically.
Well, you still...
Like, it doesn't give you direct control over the device.
I think why bother, I would say, that's the next huge worldwide giant. Who solves this problem, because everybody in every country in every home has the same problem.
But it sounds to me like place names and indexing is a good solution.
It's very exciting, very pleasant. A lot of these things.
Have you ever worked with a, go into the city and come up with a list of all the names of the train stations and try to navigate your way around? You need the map.
Well, sure,
but which map? That's exciting. Train stations.
Objects.
Because I need to speed up a bit, because I'm not sure if you have other dates. I have time, but we did a project with Deutsche Bahn, and there was a long time this idea of indoor maps, and now these things come together. Indoor navigation doesn't work very well. There are some technology things, but also let's say the sensors missing. Another thing is what was exciting in that sense that we said maybe it's not indoor mapping. That's for indoor navigation, because people don't need exactly to know, go around here, this, because they can see it. But if you take this example now, what I talked earlier, we need an indoor model. And now coming also to Professor Ki-jun Lee in Korea, we talked about, was a different shift, not just for finding the room, but in the room, how did you have an indoor model that this lamp on the one hand side is having, let's say, an IP address. So, not IP, it's a MAC address, kind of hardware address. So if you can point to this, in the sensor, what I said earlier, and if you have just a few devices, you don't need a very good precision in indoors. If you have just one lamp in the room, you have to be the position in the door, in the room, or outside the room. If you have two lamps, like ceiling and like desktop, it's absolutely enough, and it worked pretty well, by the way. We implemented also, a student did this, to just get a with beacons, so it was not so good at positioning, but the combination in raising the smartphone up and pointing that, also with learning earlier, or that one, was good enough to distinguish this long list from this lamp or this lamp. Was good enough. The next thing was, think about the beamer. We're having a beamer now. The beamer is there. Wouldn't it be great? That's why I'm telling. I'm telling really about the next 3 years. I'm not really talking too long. Would it be great to take this picture, or let's say make a real, you know, in a real case, you can just take a picture. And this picture, I would like to have on the screen. And in this case, in fact, the beamer has the address, but physically I can take a non-electronic device. This is non-electronically, so I don't need a sensor here. I would be able, with this idea, to point to this device, what's a select, by pointing, where the indoor model would have a relationship from this screen to this beamer, to this IP, to this MAC address, and the MAC address via ZigBee and Wi-Fi back to my mobile phone. And the next one, think about why have this beamer not like a little engine, like a little motor? Because maybe in future you have 2, 3, and you could drag and drop this picture and say, I don't need it now. Maybe on this wall.
Yeah, so whatever's doing that actually needs a map of all of the objects and all the people in the room at this moment, so that when you make a motion or you use spatial language, it understands what you're doing. So this is just going back to what I said about AR. Apple has AR Kit, right? You know what the principal medium type in ARKit is? It's,
you're talking about the Mateo one. Mateo.
It's something called WorldMap.
WorldMap?
The WorldMap. So it's using all the information that the phone sensors is picking up, plus any base map information that's available, and it creates a 3D moving map of your surroundings in order to put information on it, but also to interpret your interactions with it in terms of where things are. You say, send this map to the projector near me, or project it on this wall.
Yeah.
Okay, which wall is that? where is a projector that points at it,
yeah.
and where is the network that connects to that projector. Yeah. And all of that is the principal activity of ARKit, of AR,
mm-hmm.
is to provide that context
mm.
for that interaction that you're trying to have.
And potentially also for an application, so a useful application, what people
yeah.
really need. And this is always the big thing where technologies, people or technology guys can do a lot of things, but what is something, now what I say, why to do this? Is that if you solve the problem of that things having every day, every world, every day, people on the complete world, and there are so many cases, it's good enough to make a huge new giant with lots of jobs, like it was in the history of Google and others, and Microsoft understanding. And because I'm going a bit to the end, I want to just mention two things which are quite important. Have you talked about GPS raw data? Android GPS raw data thing? Because what we talked now was about the indoors, and I'm pretty sure what you said, Josh, that it fits very well together with this RR. And in the outdoor world, there's another development now. This was on the Wear Camp, also inviting you. Also, we had about 2 years ago a presentation from Ed Parson. He works for Google, and there's a new development called GPS or GNSS raw data measurements. So the idea is now, this is, let's say, mobile 1.0, what we talked about. We can use the term mobile 2.0. And it will be not something like IoT thing. It will be just this device, more or less the same, just better, nicer, not cheaper. So what happens now is, and there's a rebuild in Android, that the access to the processing of GPS data is now accessible. What does it mean? That means that together with the announcements of Broadcom, that next year they have new chips like dual frequency chips in mass market devices, together with the process of differential GPS corrections for the mass market, can lead to the situation, or will lead to the situation, that these devices have a precision of 50 centimeters.
With a subscription.
Depends. Like, this is a question of the difference. That's why I, at the beginning, said between the leads, somehow is a question of how to build this. Like, the Wi-Fi positioning was done without subscription. Google is really caring for it. They just spend money on it, they like it. The precision, the need, the expense are not so high. So if you say about, let's say, 30, 40, 50 kilometers, you have one position. You can have like OpenStreetMap people having one fixed mobile phone, taking the difference in the error every day, setting up with a cheap infrastructure. So it's a bit similar like assisted GPS, which is also not a subscription model. But the exciting thing is,
well, so this is what Trimble does now, right?
Exactly.
You buy an R1
yeah.
subscription, and it's just
yes.
this little device that talks to your phone and gives you 30 centimeter accuracy.
Yeah.
Yes, and this is, so it's nothing but this technology completely new, but the new thing is now the industrialization idea. Again,
mm-hmm.
what would be if you in your pocket have such a high precision? Maybe you would start mapping, surveying all the time.
Yeah, it means you never have to look up from your phone.
Maybe also.
This is getting driven by self-driving car market.
No.
No.
No. I asked. I was in Portland on the ION conference last year. There's an ION conference. This is the GPS people meet there. It's almost every year in Portland, and it's all very good to go there. And I really asked. It was like Frank van Dingelen. He invented also the assist GPS. Why do you do it now? And the answer, I asked also Ed Parson, that said, we have time now. There's not really a big reason. And it's also, you see, maybe also the market requires something new sooner or later. But now the chicken egg problem comes. If you would have that device, like your device here, would have such a precision in the outdoors, what you would do with that? Mobile tools.
So this is a great discussion, and I wouldn't want to discourage anybody, but technically we do finish up at 1:30, so I want to make sure that...
Just an invitation, and then I really... So here are some links. This is something you can... There are examples in the real world where this could be used. We could think of that the mobiles can tend like similar from Web 1.0 to Web 2.0 from read to write. You can create your maps mobile. Then you would have your GIS. Then again, from this kind of all the discussion what we had, we set up a new community, and this is what we called now the Association for Geoinformatics, which was the old one, more academic people, more professors, SDI related people, not so bad, but coming a bit down, with the mobile people from Stanford University. There was a WARE conference, there was a WARE camp, and so that's why we have the WARE camp conference, and we have it now this, in the 8th edition next year. This is from the last year. You're very invited if you would like to come around. Like, flights are cheap, you can stay, we have a laboratory, like a camp overnight also. These are our members, like Galileo, this is a European operator. We do have other events also. We had this Galileo hackathon with raw data a bit early. We had talks, we had variable hackathons, it was mentioned before. This was also 2005, this is one of the founder, Philip Candela, just visited him in San Francisco, he's now the CTO of Tillenov. This is, you know, maybe? Yes. Ah, so, okay. Steve Coase, founder of OpenStreetMap. This is Christoph Helmes, is the vice president of HERE. He is a big competitor against Google Maps. I don't know if you know, they bought Navtech. They have 7,000
right,
people.
So that's why Ed is going like this.
Ed is also extreme good. So we, you see also, we had the OpenStreetMap people, we had the commercial people together. We have the application people, and we have also some projects, we have also some conclusions in that part. So this process where we set up our community was after discussing what we had here. And the result was that maybe we kicked out 50% of the people, by the way, that did not pay very well. They were more left-wing people, I want to say. I want to make it a bit no, quickly, because so we changed the association, that we brought in people from industry. Now we kicked out also people outside. It was not a very easy process, but very successful process. And then also we really had some of these major thoughts, which what we talked about is already. So from this point of view, I think we discussed it really also in that one. We still need good umbrella terms. GeoIT is the big one, like IT, GeoIT. I'm still looking for a better term like GeoWeb, because I don't like the term either. But sooner or later in education, we need a good term for this umbrella covering Google Maps, OpenStreetMap, and SDI. We need a term to being able to tell. And if you like to get a contact or visit also me in Germany and give your talk and your thoughts on this one, so you're very, very welcome. As the next opportunity, October 24th in Berlin, but also sooner or later on other opportunities.
Thank you.